This episode is brought to you by Geek Aid. What's your geek? And ghouls and comic book fans out there in internet land. Welcome to the first of 3 weeks of Halloween month here on the Nonstop Comic Shop, where we'll always have issues. My name is Jordan Hazelwood, and I'm across the sofa from my good colleague, Mr. Brendan Michelli. Brendan, how does this spooky day find you?
Busy. I have a lot of laundry to do. Yeah, there's nothing scarier than... Well, you know, I will say that the dryer is acting up, so it might break on me. That's kind of terrifying, because I haven't got the money to fix it, so...
Horror is where you find it, Brian.
Yeah, when you gotta pay your own bills, different things are scarier than they used to be.
What can I say? Our new site takes Halloween month very seriously, and so should we. And so I thought that I would we would kick off the first of 3 weeks that we'll have in here in October... with a look at the master of all vampires, Count Dracula. And because we've been having a lot of fun reviewing movies and, you know, awful animated direct-to-video comic book media as of late, I thought that we would actually double down tonight, because I was aware of two comic book inspired tributes to the Prince of Darkness, the former Vlad the Impaler. And I'd like to think it didn't disappoint. Well, actually, let's start with the one that kind of did disappoint.
Yeah, the one that absolutely did disappoint.
We began this Halloween month excursion with The Batman versus Dracula. And I cannot stress enough, it's The Batman. Not A Batman, The Batman versus Dracula from 2006. Direct-to-video animated movie.
They put so much stress on the fact that it's the definitive, it's the Batman, but not on the Dracula. So it could just be any Joker, any vampiric Joker from Romania just happens to have the same name.
Honestly, I've been meaning to talk about the show known as The Batman for quite a long time. It's, I mean, obviously, the Batman animated series, even in the couple episodes of the new show, I feel like I've kind of sung its praises quite a lot. I loved that show so much, and I'm certainly not alone. I mean, it basically gave birth to an animated cinematic universe, if you will, of so many DC properties and various television shows, from Superman to Justice League. Well, the thing about the Justice League show is that it jumped ship from its comfy home at Fox with the Fox Kids Saturday morning lineup. Or actually, no, they also had like the Animaniacs and Tiny Toons. That was every weekday, like afternoon.
Yeah, it was the afternoon block.
So it unceremoniously jumped ship to Cartoon Network, because it was 2000 and all cartoons were on Cartoon Network. So
yep.
Fox didn't really want to let the cash cow go. So they said, like, we'll just make our own Batman with hookers and blackjack, and so that's The Batman. And while I actually did rather appreciate the very sort of more modern sort of Batman Year One kind of feel with The Batman, I did like how he's just starting out. He's basically meeting all of his more important characters for the first time. He has a very adversarial relationship with the police, which is funny because the commissioner is voiced by Edward James Olmos, which a gentleman who unfortunately has kind of is getting a habit of disappointing me in comic book format. See also the old show when I reviewed the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But he's not playing Gordon, by the way. But he does send these two detectives, one of which is voiced by Ming-Na Wen, who again see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The other one is unfortunately Bruce Wayne's childhood friend from the orphanage. Yes, in this universe, they don't allow your butlers to just adopt you. Bruce actually spent some time in the orphanage for a while. So, you know, he has this this interesting divided loyalty about how, you know, his best friend is hunting him in his alter ego. And then his best friend just kind of turns into Clayface. And we just sort of forget about that. And then Yeah, the villain redesigns were kind of an issue, I find, with the Batman.
Yeah.
And first and foremost, you have the Joker, who is voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson, who was Jason Woodrue in Batman and Harley Quinn. He's the giant hulking black dude you get for your giant hulking black dude roles, you know, when Michael Clark Duncan is, you know, not alive anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
And his Joker is proportioned like an orangutan.
Yeah. His arms are longer than a human's arms. He walks stooped over. He very much moves like a great ape. This is my first experience and exposure to the Batman. The Joker just flat out, his facially, from the neck up, he's clearly meant to look like the jester on a deck of cards. His hair, all its dreadlocks, hangs loosely in such a way that it mimics a jester's cap.
The coxcomb.
Yeah, and then he's got the color scheme of the Joker, white skin, orange jacket, green hair.
I should probably mention that originally, he didn't dress like that. Originally, he had like a rainbow-patterned, torn straitjacket.
That might work better with the way his face and his body is designed. But overall, the Joker comes across less a clown prince of crime and more just an unusually eloquent feral animal.
And then you have the Penguin, who is voiced by Tom Kenny. Yes, SpongeBob is your Penguin for this evening. I remember way back in the Innocent Halcyon days when the show first came out in 2001 or thereabouts, how many people complained about his bright, sandy brown hair.
Yeah, it looks a little reddish to me, but yeah, it's unusual because the Penguin, every Penguin iteration I've seen, he's had black hair.
Mm-hmm. Because Penguins aren't really terribly known for their extremely bright color schemes.
Yeah.
It's not worth getting upset about this sort of thing anymore. Instead, I'd rather be upset about the fact that in this version, Penguin is a total weeaboo, in that he spent most of his time abroad in the Orient. No, seriously, he says that. And he has two razor-handed geisha bodyguards, which he doesn't honestly need, frankly, because he's a goddamn ninja. Like, go to YouTube and type in the Batman Penguin fight scene, and he is, like, brachiating and bouncing through the rooftops or treetops like he's the star of Legend of Kage or Crouching Tiger
and
or something.
I'm sorry, but his body type does not lend itself well to any kind of physical exertion at all except rolling down a hill uncontrolled.
It's just, I could not take him seriously. The Riddler, voiced by Robert Englund.
See that.
Freddy Krueger, Happy Halloween, I guess.
Yeah, that's the first voice casting that I've sat down and gone, you know, that could work.
The Riddler, physically, he looks kind of like Robert Smith. He looks like a British goth rocker with really stringy hair. So that's about all I really have to say about the Riddler.
Yeah.
And maybe he'd benefit from having a bowler hat or something to pin the hair back, I don't know. But then you get to Mr. Freeze, who is basically an Iceman, and he's voiced by Clancy Brown. Because I guess they didn't have Lex Luthor to have him voice him in this continuity. Oh well. And he's out to steal diamonds because he needs diamonds to power his cryo guns.
Wasn't that something lifted from the atrocious Batman movie that had Mr. Freeze in it that nobody liked?
Ding, 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 Brendan.
Oh, I'm so glad that most of these characters did not appear in the Batman versus the Dracula.
Yeah, this preamble's going on way too long, honestly. Suffice it to say, The Batman started out as a edgier alternative to the Batman animated series Batman, who had since joined the Justice League. And all I can say is that, you know, five seasons later, Commissioner Gordon has replaced Edward James Olmos and their best buddies, and then the Batman is invited by Martian Manhunter to join the Justice League. So you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the story of this. But anyway, very near towards the end of the Batman's run, they decided to give us this some hot bat-on-bat action. So, without much further ado, here's the story of how the Batman versus the Dracula. And as I recall, it starts in Arkham Asylum.
They're doing bingo in Arkham Asylum, because I guess you got to keep the inmates busy.
The really creepy Joseph Mengele-looking staff who all have, yeah, like, rubber and vinyl lab coats on.
Yep.
Are calling bingo. I guess thematically it sort of works, but not maybe not really. But
kind of. I prefer an arts and crafts thing like the Insane Asylum from the second generation of the Transformers, where they put Galvatron in a, and the Decepticons put him in an insane asylum because he was just too damn crazy even for them. And in the arts and crafts room, he builds a laser gun, working laser gun instead of macaroni pictures, and tries blasting his way out.
Well, I don't blame Arkham Asylum for not doing that, because they kind of, frankly, they have enough trouble keeping these guys here as it is. I do take some umbrage with the fact that the Penguin is there.
Yeah, that's for me as well.
Hasn't that always been the Penguin's thing? He's the only member of Batman's Rogues Gallery who is not certifiably insane, and so always goes to, like, Blackgate instead of Arkham?
Yeah, okay, he doesn't go to Arkham, but he's in Arkham now. And there's a guy next to him who's basically telling him that, hey, we need to bust out of here because I left, before I got sent to Arkham, I, you know, robbed a huge bank or some shit, and I hid the loot, and if you help me bust out of here, I'll split the loot with you. And he basically starts a very good, the bad, and the ugly, the name of the grave is unknown, next to Arch Stanton kind of situation with the Penguin.
He's not nearly that subtle. He just flat out says, oh, I buried it in a crypt in the north wing of Gotham Cemetery, the one that has a cross on it.
Yeah, the crypt that has a cross on it.
And already I'm thinking to myself, I've been to a couple cemeteries in my day, that I don't think that's going to narrow it down.
Yeah, not at all. And so the Penguin's like, well, fine, I can bust out of here for, you know, half the loot. Then apparently it turns out that the guy told the, you know, approached the Joker first, because otherwise we wouldn't have conflict in this movie. I don't know.
Because the Joker obviously knows how to bust out of this place. He's done it like 25 times already in this continuity alone.
Yes, but the Joker design that they give us in this show, it's like, this is not a guy I approach with, hey, if you bust me out of prison, I'll give you half of my treasure. I'm expecting him to betray me and eat my face, you know, for laughs. Mm-hmm. So you start with if the Penguin is in Arkham, you won the lottery. You start your breakout plans with the Penguin, because he is sane and, you know, might not betray you, because if keeping his word can help his reputation with the rest of the criminals in Gotham, he'll keep his word. So you start with the Penguin. Joker's the guy you ask last. Joker's the guy you ask after Calendar Man turns you down.
This did come out 2 years before The Dark Knight, so he hasn't seen that how well, you know, the Joker's bank robberies tend to go yet. But so chaos erupts for reasons, and the Penguin needs the Scarper out of there because the Joker's already escaped, and, you know, it seems clear that he's going to score that sweet, sweet booty. Joker and Penguin just sort of zero in on the cemetery. Batman's there. He's
on their way to the cemetery. The Joker and Penguin fight, and we get our first taste of Kung Fu Penguin, which I didn't really appreciate, but whatevs.
When Joker defeats him thanks to an electric joy buzzer, and I do like the fact that while he's electrocuting the Penguin, he shows off the buzzer in his other hand.
Yeah, because Penguin kind of looks at him like...
You never know what hand you're going to shake. You think you just need it in the right hand, but so people are zany, they might shake your left, and then what will you do then?
Yeah, so I think the Penguin actually shakes his left hand, which the joke is that it's also in his right hand. And then, you know, the Penguin gets knocked into the water and survives because Penguin, and then the Batman assaults the Joker, kicks him off of a dam, he falls in the water, and his joy buzzers malfunction. We get, you know, lightning and bubbles coming out of the water, and then Batman sulking because the Joker is dead. I'm not even kidding. Batman is sulking and crying because the Joker is dead.
Alfred, I watched the Joker die. I never thought I'd miss him so much.
I'm sorry, but there is no version of Batman that is worth tolerating where he is not thrilled to see the Joker die by someone's hand other than his own. You know, the Joker died at his own hands today, and I am totally cool with that, is what Batman should be saying.
In my experience, I've seen several stories that try their damnedest to explain why Batman wants to see the Joker, why he wants to see the Joker rehabilitated as opposed to killed. Because I feel like you've mentioned this in so many of our long rambling invectives against the other Batman versus movie we could think about that we could name, in which Batman seems totally cool with pasting random goons' brains across walls. You feel like, you know, if Batman is this cavalier about killing people, why has he not killed the Joker yet?
Yeah.
But the answer to that is, of course, marketing. But
yeah,
still, this is the first experience I can think of in which the Joker seems to die, and Batman is just honestly kind of broken up about it.
Yeah.
And I find that hysterical.
Yeah, it was hysterical.
That was worth the price of admission alone, and Dracula hasn't even shown up yet.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if he's broken up if, like, Two-Face dies, because,
sure,
you know, Two-Face is a walking tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
The Joker is not. The Joker is, you know, a force of nature, is a disease that needs to be put down. But anyway, so sulky, crying, pouty Batman.
Yeah, so he's distracted from his brooding and sobbing to allow the Penguin to get that sweet treasure, and so, just as I assumed, he goes to the North Wing, and there's a squintillion crypts or tombstones of crosses.
Yeah, it's like, well, there's a lot, so he starts searching through as many as he can find, and...
Well, I'm pretty sure the first one he knocks into is this massive, labyrinthine, eerie catacomb, and inside, like, hey, there's a massive stone sarcophagus
it's suspended in midair from chains. You know, it's like... Okay, and the guy's like, "Wow, this must be where he's hiding the money." And I'm like, "Does this look like where a mobster hides money?"
I look forward to the day that I actually have to talk to a mortician to arrange a loved one's funeral and say, like, "How much for the midair coffins and wrapped in chains?"
Yeah, how much to suspend it from the air? Like, literally, this looks like the start of a Clive Barker movie.
It kind of does, yeah.
You know? And he's like, "The money's in there," and I'm like, "You are too stupid to live."
So he tries to jimmy open cuts the sarcophagus down and tries to jimmy it open with an umbrella sword, which, in my experience, the Penguin in the Batman's continuity just uses throwing stars.
Yeah.
He doesn't even bother with the whole umbrella thing.
Yeah.
But
which may explain why he's holding it wrong and manages to, when he pries the lid off, cut his hand mm-hmm. somehow in a way that would be physically impossible to cut your hand if you were using the umbrella sword to jimmy the lid that way.
Yeah. But now he finds a horrible desiccated corpse inside. You know, the indignity,
which
of
is
it
also
all,
chained up.
Which yes, but of course he has also gashed his hand horribly, so he bleeds over the corpse, and up comes Nosferatu.
Yep, and so we get a vampire chasing Penguin sequence as Penguin is fleeing from the vampire.
And of course, a night watchman stumbles by, and Dracula's like, "Hey, there's a non-major character. I can drink him."
The security guard's always the first one to die in these kind of horror movies.
Mm-hmm. So he feeds on this guy, and the guard rises as a lost one. I do love how the vampire spawn already come. Yeah, they come pre-equipped with their own cool name.
Yep,
which we'll talk about more later. But this completely rejuvenates Dracula, and you take a look at the guy, and in my opinion, he kind of looks like Christopher Lee cosplaying as Bela Lugosi.
He very much does.
He is like 6.5 feet tall, but he has Bela's like a widow's peak sort of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And best of all, he is of course voiced by Peter Stormare, everyone's favorite evil Russian who's actually Swedish.
Yeah. And to his credit, he does a decent job with the voice, but, you know, the voice acting's not the problem in this movie. So many other things are. Yeah, so...
I'm trying to think of, like, how many obvious vampire puns have we already skipped over? I mean, I'm saving... my favorite, I will obviously share with you when the time arrives,
yes.
But everyone is just so jokey, and obviously it's a kid's movie, ostensibly. A kid's movie where a dude, you know, flays his hand open and bleeds on a corpse.
Yeah.
Basically,
Penguin gets turned into Renfield.
Dracula does not want to turn Penguin because he's a main character, and Penguin tries to step off saying, "I'm a Oswald Cobblepot. I live in a pineapple under the sea. I serve no one." Okay, I'll be your Renfield.
Yeah, basically, Dracula does hypnosis shit, and then the Penguin is his Renfield.
Then it's Bruce's date with Vicky Vale.
Oh, yeah, Vicky Vale.
I could be mistaken, but I think this is the only appearance of Bruce's own personal Lois Lane, Vicky Vale, mm-hmm. in this continuity. And they're on a date, and while this Bruce Wayne, who's voiced by Reno Romano, who is a voice actor, I feel just kind of kept all of these stale, white bread, bland hero characters warm before Nolan North could get them later.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of...
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I think they make kind of a cute couple, although this Vicky has long red hair, and she's voiced by Tara Strong. So, sadly, I was kind of getting some Batman the Killing Joke flashbacks.
Yeah.
Which made this just slightly uncomfortable. On the date, Bruce Wayne says, like, "Well, we at Wayne Enterprises are working on a new solar battery, solar energy converter. you know, in this vampire story. Wink.
Yeah, this right here leads to one of the biggest flaws in this movie is that there is not a single event or plot point in this movie that happens that you did not already predict an hour or more before the event happens. As soon as he says, so we've got this solar machine that can collect solar energy and then store it and then eject it as, you know, pure sunlight, everyone in the audience goes, well, Drax is going to be face full of that.
Mm-hmm. The news starts reporting that there are several Gotham citizens that are being abducted. We're calling them the Lost Ones.
Yeah,
again,
because
it's a comic book and they ought to have a name like that.
They gotta have a catchy name. And so that's like the one in the background. And then Bruce Wayne's on his date with Vicky. As soon as the sun goes down, he excuses himself to put his cowl on and go bat patrolling because they haven't invented the bat signal yet and he doesn't know he's needed. While on bat patrol, the security guard attacks
a mugger grabs a purse from a woman,
runs to an alley. The security guard, the vampire security guard from the graveyard, grabs the purse snatcher, drains him, and bamps him. And the purse snatcher, the victim, and the security guard. So three vampires in play, and then Batman shows up. So we get three vampires.
I can take you all. I'm Batman.
Yeah,
and he gets his ass kicked.
Yes, three people who have no combat training. The security guard maybe, but the dude was 60 before he got turned into a vampire. But yeah, these three people who are now vampires kick Batman all up and down Gotham City. He barely escapes with his own life by flinging a train at them and forcing them to retreat. And then so he goes into the Batcave and he's talking to Alfred and he's like, I think they might have been vampires because, they had red eyes and fangs and, like, literally, one person turned two others into these creatures or some kind of virus thing. And Alfred's like, vampires are a myth, sir. I have to pretend that I'm not in a cartoon, sir. Vampires are a myth. And to his credit, Bruce is like, they clearly weren't human. And then he's not wrong. They clearly are not human. Maybe saying vampire is a little early, a little premature, but okay.
Unfortunately, Bruce has kind of bigger problems because he's watching TV while Dracula is also watching TV in the Drac cave.
Yeah,
Dracula's on his sweet, gigantic, big screen TV. Yes. I was commenting, I was like, how does Dracula have a nicer TV than Bruce Wayne? And
yes.
then Penguin mentions that he basically just went to Best Buy and came back with a 60-inch diagonal plasma screen TV. You know, plasma, like blood, get it?
And it's literally what the Penguin says. Literally, that is a quote. We're quoting the movie here, folks.
So I'm happy to have forgotten like 20 lame vampire puns just so I can remember that.
Yeah,
because
this movie was full of lame bat puns.
So the news program, of course, has Vicky interviewing a random homeless man. And
random homeless man. Eyewitness to an abduction.
He's the first of two random homeless men who are eyewitnesses to vampire attacks that we'll talk about tonight. This is my less favorite, sadly, but long story short, he says that he saw a giant bat-shaped person sort of, abduct these people and drink their blood. So Vicky says, well, okay, so obviously these people are being kidnapped and cannibalized by the Batman.
Yes.
Oops.
Yeah. like literally, you're in a Batman continuity and a bat-shaped thing is abducting people and drinking their blood. Your first suspect is Batman and not, I don't know, the Man-Bat?
I want to say that Kirk Langstrom has shown up in this story beforehand, but yeah, no one mentions him.
So then there's the big event where the Lane Enterprise is having a dinner gala/ I guess tech expo at his house.
At his house, and Dracula mentions that he wants to visit there so he can stake his claim on high society. Vampire joke. That the kind that, that Dracula would make, he would joke about being staked.
To the Penguin's credit, when Dracula makes his comment about stake my claim to high society, in the background, the Penguin pulls a face like, oh god, I can't believe I'm working for this guy. it's a blink and you'll miss it, but I'm like, at least somebody who was animating this was like, no, I'm sorry, the Penguin has to know that's a shit joke.
So Dracula just cowboys up into Stately Wayne Manor. He can arrive at someone's residence uninvited, because he's a vampire.
Well, it's like literally, he strolls into this house, which is a house. He shouldn't be able to come in without being invited, but okay.
Let's not bury the lead about this scene anymore. I was, at this point, becoming a little concerned. Like, I had heard horrible things about this story, And it's just been kind of bland and you know, and obvious so far. It's
compared to
the other movie we're reviewing, which is hilariously awful, and I knew that ahead of time.
Yes.
I feel like maybe this won't be the ideal double feature. And then Dracula introduces himself to Bruce and Vicky, saying, "Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Alucard."
Yeah.
And you flipped your lid. You demanded I stop the movie and get out of my own house, right?
Not when he said I'm Dr. Alucard. The reason I made you, I actually did make him stop the movie. The reason I lost my shit and almost didn't want to continue watching this is because Bruce Wayne does not say, "Oh, hi, Dracula, so you're the villain. Excuse me, I gotta go put my bat costume on, come back and put a stake in your fucking heart." Batman is suspecting vampires already.
Yes,
Batman is suspecting vampires already, and a man walks up and says, "I've never played Castlevania, so I think this is a good cover story. I'm fucking Alucard." Seriously. And he does not react in any way, shape, or form. It literally takes more time and other things happening before Batman even puts together that maybe that Dr. Alucard guy is the reason for the vampire attacks. And I'm like, world's greatest detective, my ass! It was so infuriatingly, butt-thrustingly stupid. Like, I raged so hard because there is no reason for Batman to not go, "Really? Dr. Alucard? Really?" Just tear him down for that? I mean, and the other thing is that the movie is so stupid because everyone watching this movie has played Castlevania. Alucard shit's not
maybe not if they're 5 years old, I don't know.
No, they played Castlevania. They're still making Castlevania games. If you're 5 years old, you played Castlevania. If you haven't played Castlevania and you're watching this movie, you've also watched fucking Helsing, I mean the anime, so you know the Alucard deal. If you're going to have Dracula introduce himself by a vampire name, pick one that is obscure. Have him use the alias he used in Bram Stoker's Dracula when he was tooling around London pretending to not be a damn vampire.
I mean, Count Orloff.
I believe that was
which, unfortunately, was the name they gave to Nosferatu, then the Dracula with the serial number sanded off movie.
Yeah, but
Nosferatu, but...
Yeah, that's a silent movie still... from Germany, you know, from interwar period Germany. That's more obscure than Alucard.
It could have been worse. He could have said, "Hi, I'm Dr. Acula."
That is the only way it could have been worse.
But
literally, I lost all faith in this movie when Bruce Wayne didn't just immediately grab a chair leg and murder Dr. Acula in the chest with a chair leg.
So it basically takes like 5 more minutes of Dr. Alucard creeping on Vicky and then vampirizing surfer dude waiter who's never before been mentioned. I guess he's just in the background and
yeah.
In Stately Wayne Manor all this time. Then it's like a cosmic switch has been flipped. A beacon rises out of the darkness, and Bruce Wayne says, "I need that man's tray and that woman's lipstick." So he writes Alucard on the tray with the lipstick and holds it up to a mirror.
And then suddenly, oh my god, I'm Dracula! And I'm like, I hate you, Bruce Wayne. I hate you completely.
My god, Nilbog is goblin spelled backwards!
Like, I almost forgive the sequence when vampire surfer dude waiter is trying to head outside to, I guess, do whatever vampire surfer dude waiters do, and Alfred is accosting him in the hallway for not carrying a serving tray, and they pass in front of a mirror, and Alfred sees he has no reflection, and Alfred, you know, goes, "Oh shit, he's got no reflection, vampires are real." You know, Alfred, who poo-pooed vampires a little while ago, is picking up on the vampire cues a lot faster than Bruce is. Maybe give Alfred the bat suit. He's got more on the ball, I think.
Well, this leads to the Batman versus Dracula. How about that?
Yeah.
Dracula is... unfortunately, since this is like the early second act, so he's not... He's totally pulling his punches on the Batman because he thinks he can still convert him because, you know, we're not so different, you and I. Literally, you
wear a cape. I wear a cape.
You've done such a great job in making this town afraid of bats. So I can just slide myself right in, and it'll be really comfortable. Did we mention that? Like after Dracula was staked like 500 years ago, his followers just dumped his ass in Gotham.
Yeah, it's like
I don't really understand. They start to explain that and then just kind of give up.
Yeah, he was in Romania. He got staked, chained into his coffin. His coffin was put on a boat, sailed to Gotham, then put in a Krypton chain, suspend it from the ceiling, and it's like, what, why?
It's like, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
No secret society to guard him or anything, like, you know, an Indiana Jones movie would probably do in this situation.
Yeah.
So, the Batman resists becoming the Dracula, and Dracula just basically tosses him into several cars, and once he's finally given up the ghost, and Dracula's like, fine, screw it, I'll just eat you, and then, here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo, so he's just saved by the dawn.
Which is what you do in a vampire movie when the vampire has his first fight with the heroes. Mm-hmm. You always smack the hero around and then have the vampire about to kill him, and then the sun comes up driving the vampire off, giving the hero time to come up with a different strategy to face the vampire.
Obviously, Batman's kind of at a very low point, but I've got good news coming. Guess what, Bruce? The Joker's still alive! Hooray!
Yes, you can get over your crying jag.
So, the Joker just kind of rocks up to Dracula's tomb. He got rescued by a fisherman or something. Like, does it even matter?
Of course,
he didn't die.
Yeah, of course he didn't die. Because it's
habeas corpus, right?
Yeah, it's a Batman thing. We can't kill the Joker, so the Joker isn't dead. He's going to come back alive because you can predict everything that's going to happen in this show.
So the Joker just kind of rocks up to the cemetery and says, hey, there's a crypt that has a cross on it. I bet the treasure's buried in there.
Yeah.
So he goes in, he runs into Penguin, he pushes Penguin's fat ninja ass aside. So he's like, hey, let me have that treasure. So he also rips open Dracula's tomb. And then Dracula grabs him, closes the tomb, and there's mad screaming and munching sounds follow. Yeah. And the Penguin looks at it and says, what does he say? Like,
breakfast in bed, freshly squeezed.
Wow, everyone's just joking about the sickest shit in this movie, aren't they?
Yeah.
But now we have Vampire Joker, and so naturally Vampire Joker decides to rob, he decides to take himself to the bank. The blood bank.
Yeah, the irony being, the Joker, the character who in all of Batmandom has the highest body count,
mm-hmm.
is the one vampire to attack the blood bank instead of random people on the street. I guess I could say that's the one thing I didn't predict, was that the Joker would be the vampire to hit a blood bank.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of maybe having another one of Batman's rogues gallery who's got more of their faculties getting vamped. Like, the Riddler gets vamped and he's like, I'm not becoming a monster. You know, I'm too intelligent and cultured and civilized to become a monster. I'm going to hit the blood bank, guys. That would work, but
I don't know. I mean, again, the Riddler in this world is really goth. Maybe he'd embrace it.
Doesn't mean he's not. Well, yeah, if he's really goth, he would totally embrace it. Because Calendar Man would totally be the guy to hit the blood bank. So yeah, so the Joker is attacking a blood bank.
So there's Batman versus Vampire Joker in the blood bank, and
because the Batman is doing a surveillance of all the alarms in the city on the blood banks.
Yeah.
Because the vampires are going to attack there, and what, instead of all the people they've been randomly abducting off the streets. World's greatest detective, my ass. I'm going to be saying that a lot in this review, by the way.
Well, even a broken clock is right twice a day, I guess.
I suppose.
So, if I recall correctly, the only entry into the goofs section on the IMDb page of this movie is in the rather stylistic opening shot of the rumble in the blood bank. Batman is passing by like rows and rows of glass vials, mm-hmm. and you occasionally see Vampire Joker's reflection in some of the vials as he's stalking him. He's a vampire. He shouldn't pass reflections.
Yeah. Also, the
take that, artistic integrity.
The blood should be stored in bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love how it isn't even a cold room. It's just here's just a gallon of blood just sitting on a shelf.
Yeah.
So they have this rumble, which culminates in Vampire Joker like knocking over a bookcase full of blood that like falls into like the air conditioning unit or something, or the air recirculation unit. And it ends up, like, vomiting a shower of blood on the Joker, and he does his, like, Shawshank Redemption sort of thing, and luxuriates in his own private opening scene to the Blade movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at that point, I think I paused the movie and said, what's the MPAA rating on this movie again? So I took a look at the box, and it is unrated. And that's one of the few things in the trivia section of the IMDb page of this movie, is that the creators said to themselves, oh, wait, we're trying for essentially like a G or maybe PG rated movie that involves a literal blood shower. How about this? How about we just don't submit it to the MPAA to be rated? They got away with that and they were able to publish it with no rating. No one cares. It's 2006.
Yeah. It's a vampire movie and you're going for a G or PG rating. How about you don't make a vampire movie, guys?
But he's a bat. The other one's a bat. This has to happen, Brendan.
So, Batman manages to overpower Vampire Joker in the blood bank. I think he uses a garlic bomb or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he was doing his best to weaponize, like, garlic. And, because fortunately, Alfred is just really good at making Italian food.
Yeah.
And, so he basically captures Vampire Joker and uses him as a test subject to craft a new wave of anti-vampire weapons. I should mention...
Batman is trying to cure vampirism here.
Mm-hmm.
The man who couldn't tell that Dr. Alucard was a goddamn alias for Dracula, you know, without a mirror and some lipstick, mm-hmm. is trying to cure vampirism. So, I don't think the Joker's got much to look forward to.
Well, actually, fortunately he does, because, again, Batman is a comic book scientist, so it really takes kind of a long time, kind of a lot of screen time, but yeah, he essentially taps into Ethan Hawke's records from the movie Daybreakers and finds an honest-to-God scientific cure for vampirism. At no point does Batman, like, rejoice that the Joker is alive again. It was such padding, I guess.
I know.
Like, we need a reason for him not to bust the Penguin when he frees Dracula, so.
Oh, my old buddy Joker.
Batman cures the Joker by, like, using the solar battery or something to treat a IV bag full of blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just hawks the thing in Joker's cage, and Joker eats it like a feral animal, and then he's back.
Yeah.
And, again, I actually reviewed Daybreakers for another internet snarky critic thing I used to do years ago. And in that one, if you cure a vampire and then the vampire tries to re-vampirize the cured vampire, then that also cures that vampire as well. There's sort of a chain reaction of vampirism being cured the same way it was spread, which is kind of cute and poetic. But no, in this he just has like syringes or like grenades that just have anti-vampire stuff in them.
Yeah.
So I guess they just got. They had enough blood play. They were trying to reel it in just in case some parents complained. But again, who cares?
Stupid plot point. When you are cured of vampirism, you forget everything that happened during the period you were vampirized.
Oh yeah, that's helpful too.
Yeah, that's helpful because how we're gonna sweep this all under the rug at the end of the movie without anyone knowing that Dracula was involved.
And that's how you know this was actually intended to be a kid's movie.
Yeah,
because. You know, apparently being turned into the living dead is one of the most easily reversible possible crimes to be committed against you. Just no harm, no foul, once this is all over.
Yeah.
Just the way the real world works, kids.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's at some point, Vicki Vale calls Bruce saying, "Hey, Bruce, Vicky's sorry trying to catch you.
Vicky's supposed to have a date with Bruce, but he's in his lab trying to cure the vampirism. She gets pissed off.
She does have this little arc in which, you know, she mentions how she feels like she's falling in love with Bruce Wayne, not because of his money or his looks, but because he's such a good person deep down inside. But it's obvious he's been living with the trauma of witnessing his parents' death at a young age. She mentions to Alfred, it's like he doesn't want to let anyone else in, does he? He's too afraid of being hurt again. And I half expected Alfred to say, "Oh, you've seen the Lego Batman movie too." But I do love how they really try to give Miss Strong sort of an arc to follow and a role to play, and then she just gets kidnapped and is the damsel in distress for the last half of the movie.
Because Dracula saw her on...
Hey Bruce, I'm sorry I missed your date. Dracula's abducting me. Maybe I'll see you next week. Bye.
Yeah, Dracula is watching, catches her performance on AM Gotham, and he's like, "Wow, she's, you know, pretty attractive for a news anchor. I think I'll, you know, make her my vampire bride."
Mm-hmm.
At least he starts out with, "I'll make her my vampire bride," mm-hmm. but then he changes his mind without telling anybody, and it's like...
There was a slight element when Bruce was doing his vampire research
yeah.
and he says, when Vlad Tepes Dracult, before he was Dracula, he was married to Carmelita Carlsberg?
No, it was Carmela Carstein.
Carstein.
Yes.
Okay, is she from anything? Because I could not find any reference of her anywhere.
I think that's actually... I think what may have happened is Warhammer Fantasy has a Count Dracula XB, Vlad von Karstein. He has a wife, Isabella von Karstein, to whom he is, the two of them are extremely devoted to each other. And I think this may be a case of somebody taking from Warhammer as opposed to the other way around, which doesn't happen that often. Warhammer is usually ripping from other people. But yeah, because as soon as I heard you, Kirbilla Karstein, I'm like, wait. Do you mean Isabella von Karstein by chance, maybe?
I don't know, man. I mean, it is nice to imagine that someone in the creative phase of this movie were really huge into tabletop role-playing. And in this case, they should have thrown Strahd von Tsarevich from Ravenloft in as well. Yeah. But the thing about the
Dracula origin is that his wife committed suicide because she believed he had been killed in battle and she couldn't go on without him. And then when he returned from battle and found his wife committed suicide and the church was denying her burial in consecrated ground because it was suicide, that's when he basically sells his soul to the devil because fuck you, God, you know, I don't need your stupid rules. But he's constantly trying to fill the hole in his life that is left by his dead wife, which is why he's always, you know, grabbing all these women and vamping them out, and then he eventually gets bored with them and moves on to another one. That's the whole thing. Yeah. Is why he's going after Mina Harker.
Mm-hmm. But that involves just him vamping these women, just like he vamps anyone.
Yeah.
But here, Peter Stormare as Christopher Lee Lugosi says, "Hey, I got a sweet new idea. I'll just take the ashes of Carmela Karstein that I've had in my coffin all this time, and
in a secret compartment in my coffin.
In a secret compartment in my coffin, I fill with a." And then he says, "And so, like, I'll bring her back by ripping Vicky's soul out of her mouth."
Yes. And infusing her soul with my dead wife's ashes. And I'm like, one, how did you know your wife was down there? Because, you know, you got staked in Romania, and now you're in Gotham City, and there's no guarantee you're in your coffin, really. Because this coffin does not look like the kind you transport anywhere, so I don't think you went to London with this thing.
I feel like this could be foreshadowed a little bit better.
Yeah, he's got this giant stone sarcophagus. We call it a coffin, we're wrong. It's a giant stone sarcophagus. Like, no, if you're going to London, you know, on a ship, you want a box that's going to travel. You don't use a stone sarcophagus, you use a friggin' coffin. Like, elaborate, ornately detailed, but still, there's no reason to believe that the sarcophagus he's in is his actual coffin. You know, if we stake the guy, why are we going to put him in his coffin? That sounds like we're being nice to him. Let's find him a nice pine box and, you know, put him on a rocket and launch his ass at the sun. Like, you don't, you know, his dead wife's ashes should not be in his frigging sarcophagus with him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I don't know, we suddenly got the soul pull, and we're going to pull a soul out of Vicky Vale, stuff it in my dead wife, just like we pulled this idea out of the director's ass.
Yeah, if I were one of those Transylvanian citizens, you know, torch-wielding, pitchfork-wielding citizens back in the day, I think, instead of, you know, taking him all the way across the ocean to dump his ass in Gotham, why don't we just fill his coffin with rocks and just dump him in the middle of the ocean? Then he's Aquaman's problem.
Yeah.
The Aquaman versus Dracula. Would you rather have been watching that?
Yes. Yes, because that would be terrible in a great way.
If it was the Batman Brave and the Bold Aquaman, voiced by John DiMaggio, I would have been so on board. What else is there to say? Batman just rocks up. He gets into a kung fu fight with like 30 lost ones.
Yeah, all the vampires have been chilling in the uber crypt that Dracula has.
Oh, I forgot that, you know, there were some scenes of the citizenry being afraid that there are now, you know, creatures of the night stalking outside, and this one guy sees this little girl outside and runs out saying, damn it, little girl, I was saying, damn it, Babette, why did you come all the way from Skyrim to come here? And because, yeah, it's a little girl vampire.
Yeah.
Like, or should I have made a Let the Right One In reference here? No, I think
the Babette Skyrim joke would probably go over a little better than Let the Right One In.
But again, this is like, I'm looking at it like, damn, like, fuck, you know, the 7-year-old girl target audience of this movie just ate a dude on camera. Like, this is... It helped. It kind of helps you get through this. But anyway, so yeah, he gets in a kung fu fight with like all 40 of the lost ones, and naturally they attack him all one at a time.
Yep, because the animators can't do, you know, multiple guys and jumping Batman. Or if more than one threw themselves at him, he would die.
He's rocking like 3 bandoliers full of syringes, so he cures everybody
and jab them, and they're cured. He basically jabs everybody, And then he fights Dracula and somehow doesn't get his ass kicked in the first 2 seconds.
Yeah, he runs out of cure, though, so he has to lead Dracula covertly through the catacombs back to Stately Wayne Manor.
Yes, but of course the Bat Cave and the Drac Cave are connected by tunnels. The Bat Cave and the Drac Cave are connected by tunnels.
And this, of course, leaves Vicky Vale to get sexually menaced by SpongeBob for like 10 minutes.
Yes, because they interrupt the ritual, her soul goes back in her body, she wakes up, and Renfield is like, well, I can't let you escape because the boss is going to want to eat you when he gets done killing Batman.
So naturally, the final showdown in the Bat Cave, Alfred does something really sort of unexciting, I think, and just distracts him long enough for Batman to bust out the Wayne Tech solar battery thing that obviously all of us called would be important in the climax.
Yep.
And just to put an extra bow on it, Dracula says, "Oh my God, Batman, you're Bruce Wayne. I'd recognize your solar battery thing anywhere."
Yeah.
So like, yeah. In my experience, whenever a guest villain learns the secret identity of the superhero, he's immediately fucking dead.
He's either dead or rendered amnesiac.
Yeah, so
solar battery to the face, and it ashes him.
And then Alfred has to what's that word? Apply bathos. It's like this is a really dark, horrible thing that just happened. I better crack a joke real fast.
Yeah.
So he's like, "I'll get the dustpan, sir." Or something like that.
Yep.
I was so expecting an after credit scene to be the surfer dude waiter, like, you know, tripping and bleeding on the dustpan and this whole thing starting all over again. But no, it doesn't happen. So so naturally, right when it seems like the Penguin's about to put his claws into Vicky, Dracula dies, and then the spell breaks, and he is distracted by the fact that they stumbled upon the treasure.
While chasing Vicky from Gotham Cemetery, he finds the treasure.
I was kind of impressed that they actually kind of went back to this. It's like, did Psycho ever go back to the money after the halfway point of the movie?
Not really.
But no, he's like, hooray, it's a treasure, and it's literal treasure, it's gold doubloons.
Gold doubloons spill out of a coffin.
Did that thug rob a 16th century Spanish galleon before being sent to Arkham?
He must have done.
Then the cops bust in, and they're like, you're under arrest for kidnapping 40 people in a mad scheme to use them to find gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's what we're blaming all of this on.
Yes, the official story becomes
that you impersonated Batman.
You impersonated Batman to pin the blame on him, abduct people, use them to find the gold that the mobster stole from the bank, you know, before the movie started, and, you know, something, shrug of the shoulders. Now, it's revealed that the Penguin is the only one who actually remembers what's going on. The Penguin, because he was
vampires. They were vampires, I tell ya!
He actually knows what's going on, so of course nobody believes him.
Patrick, help me! Get Mr. Krabs to post my bail!
Yes, he's thrown in a paddy wagon and driven off. So, we're left with a very unfulfilled feeling, because nothing happened in this that was exciting. Or at all.
Like, yeah, it kind of just ends from there. So.
Yeah, it's like, okay, Dracula's dead. I guess we're gonna go away. They give Vicky Vale the closing line of the movie.
It was beauty that killed the beast.
Something like that. Yeah, I was like, okay, whatever.
She's just like, I really should make a stink because I'm not coming back in the show later. But yeah. I just don't care enough.
Yeah, and so we close the chapter. We close the book on something that didn't need to be made. I mean, it's like they're making this thing ostensibly. They're you know, using a younger audience kind of show. They're going really dark in a few places, but then they got to undark themselves as quick as they can because kids show. And then it's like, guys, your tone is uneven. Your plot is cookie cutter, by the numbers, bland and forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, literally, the part that sticks in my mind most strongly is how stupid Batman was when Dr. Alucard... Yeah. I'm sorry that I keep coming back to that, but you can't have a detective movie where your detective has already met vampires, suspects they're vampires, and has voiced this to a confidant, and then have Dracula confront him and say, "Hi, I'm Dracula, Count Dracula, you know, the famous one they wrote the book about." And the hero, you know, just completely not pick up on it immediately.
Yeah, in summary, though, it's this is a really difficult one to like recommend to people because it's not hilariously bad enough to laugh at, and it's certainly not any of its actual qualities are really not enough to buoy it. And it's also the Batman, which is of all the versions of Batman that are flying around right now, it's one that's clearly just been utterly forgotten.
Yeah.
While there may be occasion to talk about it again, I think it used to be on Netflix. I think it was actually taken off recently. So, yeah, maybe we should just kind of move on. And we should definitely move on because if you're looking for something hilariously bad...
Yeah, something so bad that it is very entertaining.
I'd like to think we'll have you covered once we come back from the break. See you soon, folks.
Hey, folks at home. It's time once again for my mid-break pick of the day, where I draw your attention to another fine internet media product here on GeekAid.com. If you haven't lost all respect for Lord of the Vampires already this episode, then you probably will after listening to the second half. So why not remind yourself of all the joy that Dracula has brought us by visiting last Halloween's Waveback, episode number 31, where Chris and Vicky discuss the classic soundtrack to the original NES Castlevania. Just a reminder, GeekAid's podcasts are freely available to all. Our library is no miserable little pile of secrets. Yeah, I had to say that line at some point tonight.
And welcome back, folks, to the second half of the Drac Attack. You know, it suddenly occurs to me, even looking back on the 75 episodes of the previous show I was on, I always strive to have a comic book review.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that in this brave new world of 2017, where it seems like everyone's talking about comic book movies or comic book TV shows, no one seems to talk about comic books anymore. The sales sort of back that up as well. I do my best to look back into my vast stores, my long boxes, and my three bookshelves full of trades and Marvel Essentials to find something to garnish the usual talking point again, because it's October and I definitely wanted to talk about the Batman versus Dracula, which I heard so much. I thought I'll dive into the Tomb of Dracula, of course, the extremely well regarded early 70s run of. Of Dracula basically, causing trouble in the actual honest to God Marvel universe. It was a raging success. I think I may have mentioned not too many episodes ago that the 1970s weren't terribly kind to Marvel.
Yeah.
On stands, I feel like the Tomb of Dracula and the revival of the X-Men are like the only really great choice classic comics there. All the old hands from Spider-Man down to Thor and Daredevil is the Avengers. Not the best stories, really. Iron Man's Demon in the Bottle was in there somewhere, but
yeah,
that was like very late 70s. The Incredible Hulk TV show started in the 70s. That was kind of nice for them, I suppose.
Yep. And that led directly to the creation of She-Hulk, so I have that to thank for. But overall, the 70s... like you said, Tomb of Dracula, which is well regarded, Demon in the Bottle, but that's only one part of Iron Man.
And naturally, because Dracula was such a success, they tried to shoot back with The Monster of Frankenstein and Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, which didn't do as well.
Not really. Werewolf by Night hung in there for a little while, but so I said to myself, well, there's got to be some good entries from Tomb of Dracula. I mean, I could talk about. In episode 10, with the vampire hunter gang, including Frank Drake, the distant relative of Dracula, and Quincy Harker, who is the son of exactly who you think he is.
Yep.
He's this crusty old man who's rocking around in a wheelchair. And then, of course, there's Rachel Van Helsing, again, the granddaughter of exactly who you think that she is.
Yep.
Who rocks an Alfred-approved crossbow. And, and so it was issue number 10, famously, where Rachel basically came out and said, all right, guys, news. So all those SJWs at Marvel are forcing us to accept a diversity hire. So everyone please say hello to Eric Brooks. He prefers to go by Blade. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, Blade.
By the way, guys, I'm sure he's not going to make, like, three movies and totally outstrip the rest of us in Q rating. Like, so one of these days there's going to be a Van Helsing movie, and that is going to blow the doors off everyone's house. Let me tell you. I might be able to hire like one of the X-Men guys to be in that. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, so, okay, there's my easy easy joke to make about talking about Tomb of Dracula. I thought back to the era between, like, between issue number 45 and near the end, which is considered especially classic. And I was I started to read those, and then I said to myself, hey, you know, there already was an animated adaptation of this. It was an anime called Dracula, Sovereign of the Damned. Is that on YouTube right now? So I check YouTube. It is!
Yep.
So let's just review that instead, shall we? Dracula, Sovereign of the Damned. Just the fact this even exists is amazing to me. This, I guess Japan was just so thankful for Spider-Man, or Supaida-Man, for basically inventing Super Sentai for them. No, seriously. The Power Rangers essentially owe Spider-Man their lives.
Yep.
So, it was the company Toei, I believe.
Oh, Toei, yeah. I know those guys.
Mm-hmm. It was a little before they invented Sailor Moon, I believe, and really etched their name in the history books. But they wanted to do an official Marvel comic adaptation. And again, because it was either this or X-Men, I guess, from coming off of the 70s, so they gave a very celebrated run in Tomb of Dracula shot, and, well, let's just talk about it, shall we?
Yeah, let's dive right the hell into this.
I mean, is it worth mentioning that I will point out the three scenes in particular from this show that show up in every imaginable supercut of bad anime you're ever likely to find anywhere?
Yeah.
Without further ado, we start in space,
just
looking at nebula and galaxies
because in 1979, all anime had to start in space. It didn't matter what the subject. Basketball anime, you're starting in space. And then, space anime, you're starting in space for obvious reasons.
And, like, bold aerial black yellow font says Dracula, Sovereign of the Damned. And then there's this extremely pretentious narrator saying that, throughout the course of existence, good has battled over evil, and sometimes evil takes the form of vampires, I guess. And while we're talking about vampires, let's show off Transylvania, get out of space, I suppose. Vampires! Yeah. And so there's, I swear, like, of this 90-minute show, which is originally a TV movie, I believe, because it kind of pauses for commercial breaks in places.
Yeah, it feels like it was aired in Japan as a TV miniseries.
So
a TV movie, yeah.
There are, you know, spooky foreboding shots of, like, Transylvania and gargoyles and Baroque architecture while someone off-screen is just wailing on a harpsichord. And eventually the pretentious narration peters out, and we just see static scenes of this, and thinking back to Manos, the Hands of Fate, I assumed they were intended to put credits here or something.
Yeah.
And just either the English version just sort of scrubbed that, or they just forgot to. I wish that was the only time I'd have to compare this movie to Manos, the Hands of Fate, but there's at least one more coming. That's always a good sign, right?
Yeah, that's a good sign.
So after like 4 minutes of establishing the hell out of Transylvania and your usual vampire stomping grounds, then the announcer comes back and says, well, let's go to Boston now.
Yeah.
Because Dracula's just really sick of this place and all the gargoyles and harpsichord music, so he's heading up to Boston. To where, unfortunately, Boston is home to Satanists, of course. And so we see the ruler of the high priest of the Disciples of Satan, who wears this, like, blue face mask with silvery white hair that we thought was his face for the longest
damn time.
Didn't
realize
it was
a mask.
Supposed to be a mask.
It's an anime based on a Marvel comic. Now, if you watch anime, people with weird skin colors happen, especially around this era. I mean, literally, it looked like we were watching, you know, Voltron because of this. You look like, you know, the villains out of Voltron. Dude's lips don't move. We think it's either like just bad animation because, you know,
or he's telepathic or
something. It isn't until like midpoint in the movie you go, oh, it was a mask. But here's the thing, you know, purple skin, horns, because guy's got horns and long silver hair.
Right.
This is the way the dude looked in the Marvel comic, because while we were watching this, I had Tomb of Dracula on my lap, open to the pertinent issues, and I was following along in the manual to see how well things matched up, and they matched up scary well.
Yeah, let's I have a lot to say about that, but I guess we'll say that for the after action report.
Yes,
but I do like how the high priest of the disciples of Satan, who I don't think is named in the anime, but his name is in the comic, is Anton Lupesky.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure like 90% of all Satanists who showed up in Marvel Comics in the 70s, their first name was Anton.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right there.
Good thing that in real life Anton LaVey is actually a pretty chill dude. Otherwise, he may have sent demons after to kill you or something. But anyway, I do love the fact that he's hosting this black mass while some hired contractors are cobbling together his dark altar.
like they're sitting there, all sitting around, and there's a knock at the door of the Church of Satan, and they open the door, and these dudes walk in, like, "Where have you guys been? We can't start the dark ceremony until you arrive with your tools." And I'm like, "Well, they arrive with their tools. What? We're sorry, we're late." And I'm like, expecting someone to say traffic was bad or something, but no, they go into the room and they start making the dark altar. And I'm like, wow, this really was a poorly coordinated black mass.
I'd like to think the contractors were so nervous that they were like, 100 dudes in spooky black cloaks who were just watching them build this thing, that instead of making a pentagram, they accidentally carved a 6-pointed Star of David.
Yeah, they carved the Star of David.
So anyway, Dracula shows up.
Yeah, Dracula just appears. Boom! Hi, I'm Dracula.
He doesn't say anything. He just stands there and glowers, and all the disciples of Satan are like, "Our Dark Lord Satan, you've come for us. Thank you.
Anton is trying to summon Satan into the room because apparently that's what they're trying to do. Trying to summon Satan. Yo, Satan, show up because we're here to do a thing. This is the thing you want us to do. We're here to do it. And Satan doesn't show up. Dracula shows up. Dracula's like, "Sup?" And then, Anton's like, "Yeah, hey, Lord Satan, here's that chick you wanted us to get.
Dolores, get your sweet ass up here and say hello to your new husband, Satan." So I do love how just a random woman just in the crowd somewhere gets up. She's not, like, prepared on the altar or anything.
Yeah, it's like...
If that was the whole point of this, she would just be sitting in the bleachers, but...
Well, the altar still wasn't ready yet, so they couldn't strap her to it. So, they flamed Dolores at Dracula, praising, the Dark Lord Satan. Dracula's like, "I think I'll milk this for what I can."
And so he basically just, takes her and he turns into a big bat.
He turns into a giant bat and flies out through a window.
Through the skylight. Yeah, obviously the Church of Satan would have one of those.
Yeah, and here's the thing. The Satanists are all like, "Yay, our Dark Lord Lucifer is taking his bride." And I'm like, he turned into a giant bat, guys, and he had a Romanian accent.
I'm sorry.
Are you all Bruce Wayne? Is every single one of you Bruce Wayne? You haven't figured out he's Dracula yet?
Well, first of all, Brendan, I'm quite certain he didn't say anything at all, so they wouldn't know his accent. And secondly, he does not have a Romanian accent.
True.
He sounds like Steve from Chicago.
He does. But he was wearing Dracula's cape.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, he was wearing the high-collared vampire cape you see in all the really shitty vampire movies in the 1930s, and he never takes that cape off for any reason in this movie.
Is it worth mentioning that, 6 or 7 years ago, when our mutual friend made that Doctor Strange costume for me, and I wear that at Halloween, most people thought I was Satan?
Well, it's red.
Because the movie hadn't come out yet,
Your cape was red. Dracula's cape is black.
Anyway, so, Dracula's about to, feed on his new bride in their nice little Best Western hotel room. And then Dracula's like, "But I can't do that. I love you. I'll just go out and I'll just leave you here and go out and drink 2 random women." So he does. He attacks a woman at an airport. And, the process kind of sort of turns her into Smurfette. So, again, with the weird skin tones, she gets this really silvery, bright blue skin after being exsanguinated. He's in the mood for a double, so he drinks another woman in front of a hairy, drunken homeless man.
Yep.
So, naturally, he provides an eyewitness report on the news, and the reason I like this guy so much better than the previous guy in The Bathman is because not only does he describe him as eating her like a wolf, by draining her blood from her neck, like wolves do, right?
Wolves do that all the time.
And as I'm snickering at this and looking down to add this to my notes, the moment I my eyes go back to the screen, he's inhaling a bottle of booze.
Yes.
Just smooth like that.
I am your reliable eyewitness. I am drunk off my ass and I don't know how dogs work.
So, naturally, Frank Drake, stately man about town, is hanging out in the bar, and he and his drinking buddies are watching this. One guy says,
And it sounds like a vampire, just like my ex-wife. Talk about a real bloodsucker, eh, boys? A woman just died.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the bartender gets a call from someone who's not Bart Simpson for a change, and he says, "Hey, Frank, someone wants to talk to you." So this lady says, "Hey, Mr. Dracula, come see us at the park."
But no, she calls him Frank. It isn't until he gets the meeting that they accuse him of being related to Dracula.
No, I think he refuses the call to adventure on the phone, but he says, "No, wait, Mr. Dracula." And he's like, "What did you call me?
Oh, yeah.
Why'd you say that name?" So then, of course, he meets Rachel Van Helsing and Hans Harker. I'm not really sure why they dropped the Quincy before, but no. So as I described, you know, crusty old man in a wheelchair and young lady say, "You, Mr. Drake, you are the son of Dracula's first wife, and therefore you escaped his awful curse. So also you're a kung fu expert or some crap. So why don't you join us and redeem your family name by killing the monster Dracula?" And Frank Drake, who doesn't even remotely deny that Dracula is a real thing,
yeah,
because, you know, in the comics he was introduced like 45 issues before this, so he'd already been kind of on the uptake.
Yeah.
But he didn't start out aware of the whole Dracula thing until Dracula ate his wife, so you'd call that something of a motivation,
yeah,
in the comics, but here he's just like, "Nah, blow it out your ass, I'm leaving." So that's when the first scene from every bad anime supercut yes, ever... is when
see, I like to call "Drive Me Closer, I Want to Hit Him With My Sword."
Yeah, Hans is just taking no for an answer, so he unsheaths the sword from a cane, which...
He's in a wheelchair, but he's got a cane.
That probably may have tipped off some red flags. And so he orders Rachel to basically push him, running pell-mell and screaming at Frank, and as he swipes at him madly with his cane, and Frank, you know, basically jumps up in the air as if someone is rattling his animation cell in broad daylight in the middle of a park. I do like how like they pass by a popcorn cart or something that completely obscures the awesome action. They purposely did that. Oh, wow, it's just so great.
Yes,
it is. Come back, popcorn cart. We need more popcorn to watch this with. And then eventually Frank busts out a Bruce Lee-esque flying Wataa kick and knocks the sword out of Hans's hand while also landing like 10 feet away. Fuck you, physics.
Yeah.
And they're like, "That's why you're good. That's why we need you for this job, Frank." Yeah.
That's basically, "Here's our sales pitch. I will attack you with a sword from my wheelchair, and then you will want to join us for some reason."
I think this is also where Hans describes the awesome, the wicked awesome backstory of their forebears, Abraham Van Helsing and Jonathan Harker. And they are basically just rocking up to Dracula's coffin in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Open the sucker. He's in there.
Like literally, they establish shots of the castle at night, and I'm like, "Why do you attack Dracula's castle at night? Are you stupid?"
So he's a hair's breadth away from driving the stake home, and then Dracula just wakes up, and the guys are like, "Oh God, we didn't plan on this!" they just freeze in panic.
Yes, it's nice.
And then they get their asses eaten. So like, yeah, you're living. Everyone's living up to their proud heritage today.
Yeah.
But still, the Scooby Gang has one other member, and I do like the fact that I have sarcastically called, like, you know, motley adventuring parties or like groups of professional monster hunters or whatever in all the fiction I've snarked at in the past. I usually call the cast of main characters the Scooby Gang, because that's what Joss Whedon would do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this Scooby Gang has a major advantage. They actually have a dog.
Yeah. I think he might actually be a Great Dane, or he's a Doberman. It's hard to tell with the animation.
His name's Elijah, and like they found this dog who had like he was drinking holy water in a church, so we knew that we could use him as a weapon against evil. So by that logic, again, another Simpsons reference, Santa's little helper, the Simpsons dog, could also be a weapon against vampires because of that one episode where Agnes Skinner screamed, "He unholy the holy water!" Frank, you know, meets Elijah, and Elijah, of course, responds the only way pretty much anybody in this show responds, with eye gleam.
Yes. Gleam. An audible eye gleam, because the eye gleam to show determination was a staple, the trope of anime at this time, and it is overused. Mm-hmm. Badly overused here, mm-hmm. And it's an audible eye gleam. There's a sound effect that goes with it. If you It's been said if you try a drinking game, take a shot whenever anyone has an eye gleam, you will be dead of alcohol poisoning by the 20-minute mark.
And I think this is also the scene in which Frank decides to shove his tongue down Rachel's throat.
Frank decides he's not going to join. Harker offers him a shitload of money. Frank says he's not going to join unless he throws in Rachel as well as a bonus. He tries to get fresh with her because it's the 70s, and that's what you did back then. And Rachel kicks his ass and fires a crossbow at him repeatedly.
Yeah, I feel like there are probably a better way to establish that the crossbow is her weapon of choice, but not only is this uncomfortable scene, but she also says, "I'll put these arrows through your heart if you try that again, mister."
They're bolts, honey. Yeah, they're bolts.
Nobody who actually uses a crossbow refers to them as arrows.
Yeah, they're bolts. But the true tragedy of this sequence is it makes us think that Rachel Van Helsing is competent. Because she trounces Frank, and she shows off that crossbow like she's Annie Oakley with a six-shooter. She comes across as competent and dangerous and capable. And none of these people are competent and dangerous and capable at any other point in this movie. They fall over themselves to accomplish nothing at a breakneck pace.
Pretty much, yeah. I think at this point we rejoin Mr. Lupesky in his spooky lair and drawing room.
Yes.
So Satan shows up, who is
Richard Epcar.
Voiced by Richard Epcar, who's I know him as the voice of the Joker from the Injustice games and Batman Arkham Origins. He's been around forever.
Yes, he has actually.
So, yeah, Satan, who is extremely huge and red skinned with horns and like naked.
He totally looks like Satan.
Really,
when you're picturing Satan in your mind at home.
Hey, Anton, how the hell did you confuse Dracula for me?
Yeah.
He throws like a flaming salamander at him in disgust.
Yes.
And he says, like, you better get on the stick and get my wife back from him, or, I'll be mad.
He's like, I need to get revenge on Dracula. And Anton's like, oh God, I'm so sorry. I'll get revenge on him right away. He's like, no. You can't touch Dracula for 1 year.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, he does say
what?
That.
Like, yes, we must get revenge on Dracula for stealing my bride and making you guys look foolish and making me feel inadequate. But we can't do anything for a full year. Now, note, there's a reason why he does this, but it's not apparent for a while yet. But it's just, it's set up as the dumbest thing ever. Like, we must get revenge on him, but we have to wait.
And of course, the Scooby Gang is not aware of this, so they are on the scene. Like, they are combing every corner, overturning every stone in the greater Boston area. We're gonna get that Dracula, that mean animal.
Mm-hmm.
And then winter arrives.
It just falls
immediately in a terrible edit. They may as well have had a little sign that says, "What a horrible winter to have a curse."
Yeah.
We're not going to stop talking about Castlevania, are we?
Nope.
And then the Scooby Gang's all like, "Damn it, we've been searching for a year and we just can't find this wily bastard."
Yeah, and they're like, "Okay." He's feeding on people or something, presumably, because there's like a pattern of attacks or sightings that
thank goodness I wrote down the notes, because there's no way I was going to keep the plot in order for this for this movie. But yes, Hans mentions that Dracula has been more flagrant. Usually he tries to cover his tracks, but not anymore. He's so confident and powerful. Look, I have marked on this map the locations of all of his definite killings. And in second scene that you always see in bad anime super clips, the map.
Attack points on the map with lines.
And it's in the shape of a bat.
Yes.
Colored in.
Yes. It's like a bat signal on a map instead of in the sky.
It's a bat map.
Yes, it's a bat map.
I am vengeance. I am the knight. I am bat map.
Yes.
Did Dracula plan that? Like, does he...
I don't know. Punisher blew up cars to form a flaming skull in a movie. I'm sure Dracula attacked people in a bat pattern, I guess. I don't know. He's got OCD. Maybe he's got Asperger's. I don't know. He's just got a thing he's got to do.
I know this pisses Frank off so much that his eye gleam is not synchronized with his eye.
Yeah.
So why are we gamely giving Dracula a year to just putz around? Well, it's so his son can be born, of course.
Yes. We rejoin the Drac family back at the Motel 6. Where apparently the living dead has somehow gotten the bride of Satan, Dolores, pregnant, and she's given birth to a boy that they've given the unfortunate name of Janus to, mm-hmm. as in, yes, the two-faced Roman god of Doorways and Betrayal.
So, Dracula is just so excited to be a father again, he decides to say, "Hey, Dolores, you may not know this, but I am not actually Satan, I am Dracula. Blah."
Yes. After he's gotten her pregnant and she's given birth, he's like, "So maybe I should tell you I'm not actually Lucifer, I'm really Dracula."
So, before he launches into his backstory, I should probably mention that Dolores is taking this news extremely well. She's bored, even.
Like, yeah, she's I knew you weren't Satan, you're too nice of a guy. I'm like, wait, what? Yes, I knew you weren't Satan, you're too nice of a guy, and you stuck around. You were looking forward to being the bride of Lucifer, and you're married to a dude, and he's not Lucifer, and you got pregnant by him. Honey, are you a bad Satanist? Are you just bad at being a Satanist? Because I have a feeling you might not be really good at this whole devil-worshipping thing.
I can think of one other female character from Marvel Comics who's a really, really awful Satanist, that being Valkyrie, upcoming star of Thor Ragnarok. But, oh god, is that backstory complicated enough that would take me like 3 whole episodes to mention. So, no, it's moving on. So, Drac talks about, you know, his life back as ordinary Vlad Tepes, you know, the mere prince of Wallachia.
Yep.
And his kingdom was verdant and lovely, and everyone was really grateful for him to be there. And then, you know, the Ottomans attacked, and
he had to stab a bitch. All the bitches.
Yeah, war was a constant threat. So he said, like, hey, you know, one thing I could do to maybe keep people from like wanting to invade so much. What if I were to impale thousands upon thousands of corpses and just leave them around as like Halloween decorations around around the border? Maybe that would tell those Ottomans to knock things off for a while. But they still attacked again. So Dracula went out to fight them, and then he died.
Yeah. And then the devil's like, dude, that impaling stuff, that was awesome. Yeah, let me make you a vampire.
I do love how Satan basically just reenacts the opening scene to Sega's Altered Beast.
Yes.
Saying, like, you're really good at impaling people and being a symbol of evil, so rise from your grave. And he causes lightning to strike his grave, and he's bam, and he's a vampire. Yeah. So, after going this whole Dracula Untold route of framing Dracula as this extremely sweet, nice guy who was turned into a vampire against his will, not because he, you know, renounced God, mm-hmm. or how, you know, other Dracula movies tend to, you know, they tend to say, like, he sort of, kind of betrayed the world of the living, and that's why he's a vampire. No, it's just like he's turned into a monster against his will, so naturally, he lives 500-some years drinking people remorselessly and totally becoming a monster up until the point where, while bumming around Boston, he heard about these Satanists who were offering up a woman to be the bride of Satan, and Dracula's like, aha, I know how to get back at that bastard for turning me into a vampire 500 years ago.
I'll cock-block him!
Yeah! So that explains why he rocked up to the Church of Satan and made off with his bride.
Yeah. It doesn't quite explain why
she's so... Why did the movie not start here?
Yeah, the movie should have started there. It really should have. Establishing that, you know, he is not thrilled with being a vampire, he hates Satan, so he's gonna, you know, poke a finger mm-hmm. in the devil's eye, and, yeah, start right. there, but...
But of course, but not that Dracula has been brooding on his evil you know, scheme of revenge, because he's legitimately fallen in love with Dolores, as he proves when they spend a swinging night on the town.
The date montage.
Montage.
My god!
You
okay.
know the I have seen so many other people review this movie, read articles and like videos. No one ever comments on what you pointed out about how Dracula clearly went out and bought a dainty pink vampire cape for Dolores to
yes.
wear.
They have his and hers matching vampire capes. And they're in 1979 Boston. They're walking down the street like this. Folks, cosplay is not a thing in America in 1979. It's not a thing in Japan in 1979. And there's two people cosplaying vampires in the middle of the freaking night, just walking down the street in Boston. It is so ridiculous. Like, the vampire... Dracula in the Batman versus the Dracula, at least had the decent sense to get a outfit that didn't, towards, you know, that didn't look like, hi, I am a vampire from a vampire movie. Dracula, it's like it's a superhero costume for him. Mm-hmm. He can't take it off, ever, for any reason. Yeah, and it's like, pretty much. It's the source of all of his powers, I guess. And he makes one for her, because he obviously went to a very expensive tailor and had this outfit made for her.
Seriously, though, man, I thank you so much for pointing that out. It was my fervent hope that we could find something new to make fun of this, because it is admittedly well-trodden ground. But
it is.
Oh, man. Okay, so speaking of things that everyone has already made fun of, so Dolores gets a letter, and this is such a famous scene that again, if you go to the IMDb page for this movie, this is one of the few quotes that's in the quotes section, which is Dolores saying, "Oh, dearest, we just got a letter from the Disciples of Satan. I wonder what it's about. Maybe someday I'll have to inform you, Brendan, that you got a letter from the Disciples of Satan. And if that happens, I hope I don't sound that happy."
I know. It's like, "Oh, you got a letter from the Disciples of Satan. I think you want to leave town. I don't know what the letter says, but I think you should leave town. If you're on their mailing list, you need to go. You need to get."
But so the letter says, "Hail Satan. We celebrate the birth of your new son, so why don't you and your lovely wife and your son come down to the Church of Satan, and we can protect your son with the blessing of Satan."
Yes. It's obvious from the letter that the Disciples of Satan know that Dracula is not Satan.
Yep.
But they're not smart.
We all look to Admiral Akbar, and he's like, "What? My movie's not coming out for another 4 years. Piss off."
Yeah. And Dracula's like, "Wow, there's no way this could possibly be a trap. We should totes go. They could cast a spell to protect my son from the guy I cockblocked, who is all-powerful Lord of Evil.
I assume they all think I still am."
Yes, despite the fact that the wording of the letter makes it is so awkward that it is clear they don't think you are. It's like, "Hey, Satan, we can cast a spell of protection on your kid to protect him with all the powers of Satan. If he is Satan, he can do that himself."
Mm-hmm.
From the comfort of the Motel 6 he's living in.
Yeah, frankly, this scene is possibly the dumbest thing that's in this movie, and wow, does that say a lot. But no, Dracula and the Dracula family load up in the family station wagon, which is to say a horse-drawn carriage.
Yes, and just as the Scooby Gang, loaded for bear, rolls up behind the Motel 6, Dracula right in front of them.
No one comments that, geez, I know Dracula's an old guy and everything, but he's seen a car before, right?
It's like they're sitting behind him. Like, "There's Dracula. They ID him. There's Dracula. Let's gat his ass. He doesn't know we're here. We're loaded for bear. Let's go." And Harker's like, "No, let's not. Let's follow them. I'm curious as to who the woman in the cart with him is." Why don't we ask her after we stake her, after the guy next to her stabbed? "So, honey, who are you? After we killed Dracula, who are you?" I mean, like, literally, the Scooby Gang works so hard at not getting anything accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
They have an opportunity to kill the shit out of Dracula, who doesn't know they're there. Let's just, because they can't see the baby from their angle. They don't even know she's got a kid with her. They just follow along to the Church of Satan, which is just outside of town. They got a nice church outside.
And of course, once the Dracula family walks in, then the cross-laden iron shutters close on all the windows. We didn't see the contractors install those. What the hell?
Yeah. Like, the contractors are probably, "You wanted an altar to the Dark Lord, and now you want shutters or crosses on them. I don't think you guys understand your own damn religion. They still haven't figured out we put a Star of David on the floor yet, have they?" No, they haven't.
So, in his full, you know, Smurf demon regalia, Anton Lupesky rocks up. Where the other 100 of his dudes are, I don't know. But he's just like, "I shall destroy you, false Satan, in the name of actual Satan. Unfortunately for you, I have this gun, this flintlock pistol loaded with silver bullets. You're a werewolf, right?" And I do like how Dracula is, you know, interposing himself between his family and Anton, and he makes this grand stand about how, "I won't forgive you for threatening me in the presence of my family," and all this. So when Anton first squeezes the trigger, what does he do? He turns into smoke.
Yeah, so the bullet goes right through him.
And the bullet strikes and kills his infant son, Janice. There is a dead baby in this movie. Happy Halloween, folks!
Yep. We're at the halfway point of this film, and we've already got a dead baby.
And somewhere near the popcorn cart watching this is that one Polish bow-wielding cop from X-Men Apocalypse saying, like, "Dude, I skewered Magneto's daughter and his wife with one arrow, and I wasn't even trying. How the hell did you miss her? Come on, man."
Yeah, so Dracula kills the shit out of Anton Lupesky, making his mask fall off, which is how we figured out it was a mask.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his head fell off when he still had a head underneath. He still had a head attached to his shoulders after his head fell off. Like, oh, it's a mask. That explains why the lips don't move.
And even though, so this fight is through, there still isn't enough time for Dracula to process what's happened. When the Scooby Gang are just in the building now, and then they engage in a really limp and pathetic fight, which culminates with Dracula, like, bodily hurling Rachel into Hans and knocking him off his wheelchair. And Frank is, like, I don't know, like, judo punching him or something, and it's as effective as you'd think it would be.
Yeah.
So Dracula just kind of pisses off and just leaves them. And then he strikes a great anime pose on a rooftop and screams to the heavens, like, "Why, God, why did you steal, or Satan, whoever, why did you steal my baby from me? Ah! What am I fighting for?" Oh, wait, I have a better one. "I should have been the one to fill your dark soul up with light!" That's about all the anime video game things I can think of.
Yeah.
You got any?
No, I think you covered all the basics. All
right. The next scene, as you might imagine, is Salvador Dali picking up a redhead in a disco in New York City.
Oh, yeah. We get a segue to New York City. You know, meanwhile, in New York, we're like, okay, so the movie's gone to New York, what's happening? And so there's this guy macking on this girl, basically end up in a convertible.
Yeah, at makeout point.
I think there's a sign, makeout point.
And naturally, they're getting their mac on while the news the news is on, and it says the third vampire slaying has been reported.
Third vampire slaying. Like, they actually say, they're calling them the vampire slayings, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're meaning it ironically because mm-hmm. the victims are drained of blood, or maybe they actually read the script and said, hey, there's an actual vampire in town.
Naturally, Salvador Dali, who is, you know, a hair's breadth away from coitus, takes this moment to pretend to be the vampire so to scare his new girlfriend.
Because we know he's not the vampire, because Dracula is the vampire.
Salvador Dali's kind of a weird guy that way, I guess. Yeah. And the woman, you know, is afraid and shudders and pleads him to stop for a long time before saying, oh, by the way, I'm actually the vampire.
Yeah.
Chomp.
And she kills the shit out of him.
Holy crap, I actually didn't see that coming.
No, I actually didn't either. I'm like expecting Dracula to land and go, bitch, I'm the vampire, and kill Salvador Dali.
This would be impressive if this was actually the plot of this movie we're watching.
Yes.
Instead of just like the latter half of a random Tales of the Crypt episode that's just crowbarred into the middle of this movie.
Yes. Yeah, it's like, wait, where does this come from? So, okay, yeah, so there's apparently vampire killings in New York, and there's this female vampire who just killed Salvador Dali, and we're back in Boston, where they're burying Dracula's kid in a cemetery. Dracula, who's pissed off because he's being all pouty and depressed, so to leave his wife alone to bury their kid.
So Dolores visits Janice's grave, and I was able to find a picture of this on Google Image Search. You pointed it out before we were able to catch it, but yes, indeed, the only thing written on this tombstone, it just says, Janice, rest in pee.
Yes, they forgot the C in peace. It's the same contractors who did the Star of David on the altar. Pretty sure. Man. There's one group of contractors in the entire city of Boston.
How are they the only game in town?
I don't know, but they have a monopoly of some kind, and they're incompetent.
So Dolores is about to sink a dagger into her own neck when God intervenes. And a holy light bathes the grave and says, don't worry, your sweet little head about this, Dolores. I'll just revive Janice and turn him into a blonde adult Voltron pilot.
Yes, no. Let's back this up a little bit. God intervenes on behalf of the Satanist who married Dracula, thinking she was marrying Lucifer. He's like, don't worry, I'll totes bring your devil spawn back to life. It's cool. Mm-hmm.
And so,
like, I'm sorry, but I don't think God works that way either.
Well, you have to admit that suddenly adult Janice does strike a very angelic, a comforting countenance, if you excuse his hollow, blank, red glowing eyes.
Yes, his glowing red eyes and his Voltron pilot uniform. And I don't mean Lion Voltron, mm-hmm. I mean Vehicle Voltron.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Is that worse?
It's not as well regarded as the Lion Voltron.
So yeah, he basically has a Sentai outfit on with a blue triangle over a white torso, and he says, "Don't worry, Mother. I, the angel, am borrowing Janice's body, and I shall use it to bathe this world, to cleanse the evil of this world, for I am a force of infinite good. Can't you tell by looking into the hell mouths bored into my skull?"
Yes.
Oh, yeah, and then the Scooby gang just say hi to Dolores. Yeah. Hey, guys, hey, we're in this movie.
Yeah.
Haven't met you yet.
They were following her to the graveyard. They were following her, hoping that she would lead them to Dracula.
And Dolores is like, "Oh, guys, Dracula's not a monster. You just don't know him like I do.
You haven't dated him as long as I did."
And then she unfolds the flashback about how she was kind of just this vacant party girl who was addled in drugs. And they're like, "I know how to turn my life around. I'll join the Church of Satan."
My friends told me I should get religion, but I'm not sure this is the one they meant.
That's all the backstory I get.
So yeah, she decided to marry Lucifer as a lark because it would be fun, she thought. I mean, literally, she's pretty much bad at being a Satanist. Like, I expect, when I watch a movie, and there's a Satanist in there, and there's a devil-worshipping cult, I expect a certain level of evil and competence. And I'm not getting either one here from her.
Now it's the Dracula versus the Janice, they have their superpower showdown.
Yes, Dracula can turn into a bat, Janice can turn into a golden eagle.
Mm-hmm. And also he can fire, gold-tinged versions of Cyclops' optic blasts out of his, fiery red eye holes.
Yep.
But Dracula fires back with Fire-nado! He summons a cyclone made of flame from the sky.
Yep.
And that kind of slaps Janice around. And that was the fight. Again, I'm doing my best not to draw comparisons to the comics, but do you know how the comics made this interesting? It was on a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's like way
cooler. I guess that'd been harder to animate, I suppose.
Yeah, it might have been a little harder.
Anyway, so immediately after seeing the fire NATO, then there's a regular NATO. A whirlwind just scoops up Dolores and carries her back to the Church of Satan. Obligatory Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest reference here, I suppose.
Yep.
And so Drac rocks up to the Church of Satan, and now it's Satan who's saying, now I shall have my revenge on you. Thank you, Dolores, for serving as bait, which, by the way, Dolores, did you know that you are also a heavenly host and were prophesized to bear me a half-angel demon child? Because you were touched by the heavenly hosts and you could possibly defeat me if you actually wanted to. That's why Janice is a vessel for an angel. It's not because of Dracula, it's because of you. You did that. Cool, huh?
I'm going to let you all know all this information, so it'll bite me in the ass later on, I guess.
Nope. So now I shall kill Dracula with the power of scrubbing bubbles! Scrubbing bubbles!
Yeah.
Just bubbles.
He literally throws scrubbing bubbles at Dracula. And then Dolores gets in the way and you know,
Dolores just
smacks Satan
just
down.
Slaps Satan away because she was just informed she could do this.
Yeah, she was just informed that, you know, she's a goddamn Jedi, so she kicks the devil's ass. Like, maybe, Lucifer, you should have kept that to yourself.
So Dracula survives the scrubbing bubbles, but maybe he shouldn't have because, oh no, he's lost his vampirism!
The scrubbing bubbles scrubbed the evil undead right out of his ass.
Did the Batman also invent scrubbing bubbles?
I guess. So he's cured of his vampirism. He has no vampiric powers.
And he really takes this kind of hard. We could discuss this for a while, couldn't we? It's like, yeah, you've been a monster for 500 years, and now you're human, and your lady love is also still alive and human, and you could probably make a decent go at this, right?
But yeah, you could. You know, okay. You know, how dare Satan, you know, strip me of my powers, dude? You didn't want the powers. You've still got Satan.
Considering he was trying to kill you, and this happened.
Yeah, he wanted to kill you. All he did was cure you. You're now mortal. You've got a woman you love. She loves you. You know what? Go back to the Motel 6 and hit the reset button. Start over. But no, he's driven, mad because he wants those powers back that he didn't want at the start of this mess.
He'd much rather just run off on his own, brood for a while, then mug a dude and take his money to the local restaurant king.
The power he hated so badly, he was willing to go cockblock the devil for, you know, to get back at him for inflicting on him. He now wants back so badly. And so, yeah, he doesn't have any money. He wants to go get some food, doesn't have any money. So he mugs a guy, beats a dude up, takes his wallet. At this point, I go, wait a minute. didn't he take his wife out to a date at a restaurant? Now maybe he vampiric hypnotism said, you know, we already paid, our meal is comped, or maybe he billed the Church of Satan. You know, the Disciples of Satan got the bill for that meal. I don't know, but suddenly he has no money, so...
Or maybe Dolores comped this meal, or...
Maybe she paid for it. I don't know. Maybe she's independently wealthy. I don't get the feeling that she is. But, so yeah, so Dracula's now, you know, in a restaurant king eating burgers, and the Scooby Gang stumbles by.
Yeah, so scene number three that you always see in every bad anime super clip ever are the Scooby Gang outside the windows of the restaurant Disco Bar King or whatever.
Restaurant King Disco Bar.
Watching as Dracula wolfs down a hamburger.
Yes. And then arguing that they can't kill him because he's mortal now, and that would be murder.
Good point. I'm mostly just concentrating on the hamburger in the scene.
Blah! This is a tasty burger! Blah! Say what again? Blah! You will know that my name is the Lord! Blah!
Okay, I'm done now. Hey, you know, Brendan, I've been collecting pictures to make the photo collage that accompanies all these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
If you can call two pictures a photo collage, I try to get the two things that we review in both halves, put them together. It is really hard to find a decent picture of the bootleg VHSs of Dracula Sovereign of the Dam, because there was never an official release, so between you and me, I decided to go with just a picture of Dracula eating the burger.
Yeah, that works.
It's the Google image search is replete with those, but anyway.
It's quite possibly the most famous single image from this movie.
Uh-huh. So Scooby Gang just kind of follows him around, and unfortunately, Dracula eventually, once he's got his protein back up, he says, I know what I'll do. I'll go to New York City and ask Layla to revampirize myself. Yeah, that woman who ate Salvador Dali, there actually was a point to that.
Yes, yeah.
That was like 25 minutes ago.
Yes, 25 minutes ago, and now we're bringing that back. Like, yeah, remember we set this up? There was a point. Here's the point. Dracula needs to get vampirized by this woman.
So, so after an establishing shot where we learn how to spell New York City in Japanese, because they forgot to remove that for the localization team. Good job, Harmony Gold. So we rejoin Layla, who's in a shower, completely naked. I guess this is an anime, huh?
Yeah, it's an anime.
And, you know, her new boyfriend or whatever says, honey, there's a Dracula-looking guy here to see you.
Yes. And then, you know, arg thud, because Dracula totally takes his ass out.
Oh.
And then, you know, she comes out of the shower fully clothed in a costume, because, you know, apparently that's
and
how
she has, like, a silver crown or sorts, and her hair is black now instead of red.
Well, her skin is lavender, so...
Yeah, you know. And then I realize, it's Lilith from the comics. There are so many odd, renamed characters in this from
Yeah.
It's weird that you have an English media that was translated to Japanese that translated back to English, and we lost so many names. I guess that's just how translations work, I suppose. But yeah, no, this is Lilith, the daughter of Dracula, who is a major antagonist to him in the comics. And here, Dracula just assumes that she's going to helpfully revampirize him so that he can once again be her antagonist.
Yeah.
She's like, nah, I think I'll just kill you, Dad.
Yeah, I think I'll turn into a bat and attack you in the face.
And Dracula's like, but a vampire who turns on the entity that made them a vampire? Who saw this coming? Oh, right.
Yeah.
So Dracula just kind of leaves as the Scooby Gang just waves their fists at him again.
Layla Lilith's relationship with Dracula from the comics is not brought up in the movie.
No, not at all.
And in fact, she's a different character. The guy in her apartment, she was actually fixing to kill that and eat, and the fact that Dracula kills and pisses her off. In the comic, you know, that's her actual boyfriend, they're actually dating, and the guy survives the encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I don't know what happens to the relationship after that, because his girlfriend turns into a bat and attacks Dracula in the apartment. I think maybe they're going to have a long chat, and he might skip town.
I don't know, but honestly, in this adaptation, you know, they're kind enough to have this awesome scene that introduces Layla, and then they bring her back for, like, a hot 2 minutes. And then she's just gone again.
Yeah, then she's gone again. We do not see her again for the rest of the film.
And the next scene is that Dracula returns to Transylvania. Like, okay, how many more people do you have to mug to afford a ticket over here?
Yeah, he had to get plane fare to get to Romania, so I'm sure he beat a bunch of dudes up.
And so he's just in the shadow of Castlevania, if that's actually, I think that's actually what his castle's called in non-Konami media, but so he just gets a shovel, just exhumes a corpse in the graveyard, and there's a blonde woman inside, a vampire, his name's Melissa or something, and he's like, Melissa, blah, it's me, turn me back into a vampire, and she's like, no, we follow Master Tomo now. So again, I don't know why Dracula just assumes that all these other vampires are going to want to reinstall him on the throne.
Yeah. So a bunch of vampires show up, and yeah, they're all like, "No, dude, we've got a new boss named Tomo, and that's who Lucifer put on the throne after you got scrubbing bubbled to back to mortality. So now we're going to attack and kill the shit out of you."
And so he hides in a nearby cabin where there are these three 70s children.
Yep.
This is one kid who has this. I don't know if he looks more like he has a afro or if he looks like a hobbit. It's kind of...
It is hard to tell.
So he valiantly protects the children from the vampire hordes, which he can do because their house is... Well, naturally, they live right next door to Dracula, so naturally they have 100 silver crosses.
They
have as many crosses as Gotham Cemetery has cross-shaped tombstones.
Yeah, they got garlic hanging around every window. I mean, this thing is, you know, every anti-vampirism protection thing you ever heard of is going on in this house. And Dracula, defends himself and the children from the horde of vampires. And it's, I guess, intended to make it, they're trying to blur the lines so that Dracula's not 100% dick. You know, he's got some redeeming qualities. Because his wife's been telling us all movie long what a sweet guy he is. And we've only ever seen him attack and kill people at airports and mug a dude for a burger.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not really on the same page as she is.
Nah, not really. But still, it is, you know, Dracula does give the old college try. He wields a giant cross like a baseball bat and bludgeons like 40 vampires. Till he hacks his way to Master Tomo. He's wearing, like, I don't know, red velour outfit or something, and, you know, no sooner does he show up when he's clearly overpowering the hell out of regular human Dracula, who seems to have run out of all of his garlic and crosses, except for the cross-shaped imprint that was in his palm from slapping enough vampires in the face with that cross.
Yeah, he had a cross in his hand that he was slapping, and it burned an imprint in his hand, because even though he's human, he's still evil enough that the cross burns him.
And he uses that to disintegrate Tomo.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it was more helpful, a palm burn than Mr. Tots from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yep.
So, we're like 2 minutes away from the end now.
Yes, we're literally and 2 minutes from the end.
I can only imagine that the writers and animators thought they had like another half hour to play with, but then they found out they didn't, so they're like, oh shit. So Dracula walks back into his castle and he's a vampire again.
Yes, Dracula walks into
Castlevania has returned me to vampire form. Vampirism is homeopathy now.
Yes.
And then the Scooby Gang rolls up and Hans
it's just Hans because Hans left the Scooby Gang back at the hotel.
Because
it's just him at this point.
Okay, I could have sworn the rest of them were just, like, outside the gates or something.
Well, Hans they're in the hotel and they find out he's not in his room and they go running to the Castlevania, but they don't get there in time because the payoff, the denouement happens while they're, you know, running up the driveway towards the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Where we get, you know, old man Harker versus Count Dracula.
So naturally, he rolls up to Dracula. Gets out of his wheelchair. Mein Führer! I can walk! And rips off a silver spoke from the wheel.
Of his wheelchair.
And fences with Dracula for maybe 3 seconds before saying, ah, that was just to distract you, Dracula, from this. And then he presses a button on his wheelchair and the castle explodes.
Yes, the wheelchair had a bomb on it and Castlevania collapses in a ball of flame and... leaving the rest of the Scooby Gang outside going, holy shit, they blew the whole castle up.
So if you ever get asked a trivia question, what does Dracula, Sovereign of the Dam, have in common with Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice? The answer, of course, is they're both hilariously awful, also exploding wheelchairs.
Yes.
I had forgotten that there's a scene with Janice and Dolores and... So, Janice is like, I must leave you now, Mother. I would eye gleam at you, but, you know, You know, so...
that much point with fiery pits of doom.
So, yeah, his angel ghost form leaves his body, and his body reverts to little baby Janice, who's alive. It would have been hysterical if he just left a child's corpse on the way out.
It would have been, like, even freaking dark, but it would have been funny.
Yeah, it's just the headspace I'm at, yeah. So, yeah, so Dolores gets a happy ending with her son.
Yep.
And, that's pretty much it, right?
Yep, that's where it ends.
Oh, and then we zoom out in space.
We don't get any ending for the Scooby Gang.
Nope.
Just, we get, yeah, the grown-up Janice appears in front of his mother, says, Dracula's dead, so I no longer serve a purpose. The angelic spirit leaves, is now a baby, she gets the baby, roll credits, and we're done. Now, some of you in the viewing audience at home may be thinking, God damn, Japan screwed that 9 ways to Sunday. That is the craziest thing, the most batshit thing we've ever heard. Damn it, mm-hmm. Japan, why did you anime that so damn much? And the response is, only a handful of things we described were created by Japan. Almost all of that was in the actual Marvel version.
Yeah.
Especially the dead baby becoming an angel, coming back to fight Dracula, turning back into a baby at the end part. Oh my God, they changed nothing in that.
Pretty much no. No, I must remind you, this stretch from like issue 45 to the end at 70 that this covers is genuinely considered to be among the best runs of Marvel Comics ever.
Yes,
top 20 easily.
That might be down to the reason it's considered the best run might be down to the Blade subplot that was completely excised from the film.
Yeah, and
because
Blade,
those issues
Blade
have Blade and a vampire private investigator hunting down the guy who attacked Blade's mother.
That would be Hannibal King, who was played by Ryan Reynolds in Blade Trinity. So, yeah, that's another movie that screwed up the heritage of Hannibal King.
Yes.
No, seriously, I did my best to reread a little bit of this in preparation of this episode. I distinctly remember reading this though like 10 years ago or so, and it's a great read. It is gripping. It's suspenseful. And
the
characterization is paced so much better.
Yes,
than this.
Better. The characterization, I think, I found in the comic book worked better than in the anime. They didn't spend a lot of time on characterization. We're just constantly told by Dolores that Dracula is this really sweet guy. The comic spends more time showing a little how conflicted he is and how he's not 100% dick. We also get the Scooby Gang not being completely useless because they're in their spare time fighting other vampires.
Mm-hmm. Especially Deacon Frost, who is a... like a obese, giant, aristocratic German old man instead of the whiny, sawed-off Euro trash that he was in the first Blade movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's more going on here. The fact that Lilith is, you know, when she's introduced, you know, the revelation that she's in a relationship with the guy in her apartment is not her meal for the evening. That's her actual boyfriend. And yes, she's antagonistic towards Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shows how desperate Dracula is that, you know, he knows where she lives, so he's going to go ask her for help. Every vampire tries to go for help, slapping him down and trying to kill him. It's very, very much the, you know, the segment of Clockwork Orange where all of Alex's past victims get the chance to take vengeance on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, you know, helpless villain gets his comeuppance sequence.
I mean, the interesting thing about Tomb of Dracula is, of course, is that the main character is the villain.
Yeah.
And you rarely see that succeed, you know, that being very successful.
Villain
in the world
protagonist
of
is very difficult to do.
But it really works with this comic. It's probably the best example of it, you know, even more so than comic runs that star like the Joker or Doctor Doom I could name. The stretch where Dracula becomes human, yeah, that is easily the best part of the comics. It you know, it puts into perspective the pain he's wreaked on the world, and you know he feels like he should be happy that he's been cured, but he's not because he's so used to being a vampire. He feels completely worthless as a human, and even regular everyday things that regular everyday humans can easily circumvent are potentially deadly to him.
The Dracula being depowered segment, where he's so desperate to get his powers back, is in the comic it makes sense because he's been a vampire so long he hasn't bothered to learn how to interact with the modern world.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, you know, I don't need money, I'll just vampire hypnotize the guy to give me what I want. You know, he uses his powers to get everything. He really can't interact with the modern world. He loses his powers, the modern world, without even trying to, is kicking his ass without realizing it. I think that the characterization in the comic version works so much better. The pacing is better. But the crazy shit from the anime, yeah, that's all canon. That's all actually from the book. The the wheelchair martial arts sword fight was done by the Japanese. That was...
Yeah, because that was as I mentioned, Frank Drake had been introduced long, long before this part, so they had to railroad him into... the story already in progress, and that was the best. That was the best they could come up with.
Yeah, but the absolutely obvious trap. Let's why don't you come on down to the Church of Satan, Mr. Satan, and you breed the bride of Satan and your child of Satan, and we'll put the Satan blessing on your Satan kid to protect him with the power of Satan, sir.
Yeah,
totally not Mr. Dracula. I mean, that is word for word from the comic book. I mean, that is totally Marvel's idea of this is a clever plan.
I mean, the thing about the comic is that he didn't plan on stealing Satan's bride. He wanted to eat the foxy brunette over there, and she was being sacrificed, like burned at the stake or something. He's like, "Hey, now stop that!" And he didn't even realize who these guys were, but they just assumed he was Satan.
Yes.
He was like, "Yeah, that's who I am." Blah.
And in the comic, he's not there to cockblock Satan because we don't get the backstory where Dracula's like, "The devil did it against my will, and I'm really unhappy with him, so I stole his bride because ha ha ha." She was a sacrifice. He rolled in like, "Dude, don't burn the chick. I need blood."
Mm-hmm.
And didn't bother to introduce himself as as Dr. Alucard, so they didn't know he was Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And they all assumed he was Lucifer, and so he takes the girl and leaves and can't bring himself to kill her, to feed on her. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he does play up being the devil, and that's why the devil is so honked off at him for, stealing his thunder. That's why the cult wants him so dead.
You'll forgive my pedantry, but I talked about odd name changes before. So Dolores in the comics is instead known as Domini.
Yeah.
Which, would you rather the bride of Satan and Dracula simultaneously be the Greek word for sorrow or the Latin word for God?
I'm going with Greek word for sorrow.
I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, Tomo, Tomo.
I mentioned before I was going to talk about Man of Stands of Fate one more time.
Yep.
So, yeah, it wasn't Tomo in the comic. It was Torgo.
The great vampire lord Torgo.
He takes care of the place while the master is away. No, literally, that is apparently what he did.
Yeah. Now, I will say one thing. I think I know why they changed Torgo to Tomo, at least on the Japanese side. Tomo is easier for a Japanese voice actor to say than Torgo. They'd have to put another syllable in between the R and the G in Torgo.
Mm-hmm.
So changing it to Tomo makes sense, and I guess the guys doing the localization didn't realize the change.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be... I'm 99% sure that's why he became Tomo, because I'm sure nobody threatened to sue them for Man of the Hands of Fate.
No. No one was even aware of that movie until it was discovered by MST3K like in the mid-90s. So.
Yeah, and no one was aware of that movie, and I'm including the people who worked on it.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is that no matter how great of a media product you may have in one media, that doesn't excuse it from turning into hilarious garbage when it's adapted into another media. As fans of Dune and Avatar The Last Airbender are already acutely aware.
Yes. Now, I will say that it is hilarious garbage. Dracula Sovereign of the Damned, you watch it, it's terrible. It is terrible from the word go, but it's the kind of terrible you watch and you enjoy because it's funny for being so terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep, with both movies tonight, I guess Dracula should probably amend his catchphrase to, "I want to suck!" And I guess I'll do it for your sixth visit to the Nonstop Comic Shop. Well, if you're joining us for the next 2 weeks of Halloween month, because there's plenty of other spooky stories to tell you about. Like, for example, the box office of The Inhumans in IMAX. And,
I don't know if that's going to be more scary or depressing.
For Mr. Brendan Michelli, I am Jordan Hazelwood, and we'll catch you next time. I'm the Nonstop Comic Shop.
Drive safe, everyone.
Law!
For more podcasts at least as nerdy as this one, go to geekaid.com. Geekaid. It's spelled like a sports drink, not like an adhesive bandage.